This is the Authentic Persuasion Show.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Authentic Persuasion Show. This is part two of my conversation with Mrs. Jennifer Hatcher from Simple Choice Lending. Jen, welcome back. Welcome here. We're still in the studio. We turned things off. We turned it back on. And how was part one? How was that conversation?
I felt like it was a great conversation. We'll find out.
And and it's fun, too. And for people listening, it's you know, one of the things that comes up is there's a lot that we could talk about. There's a lot that you could do in your answers. And you know, there's this tendency to sometimes for guests to just go on and on and ramble. If anyone's listened to a podcast, you've heard those where it's like, okay, this person's still talking. It's been like 8-10 minutes. You are great with the short answers. And I know that there's a lot more in it as well, which is why
so
I recommend
much depth.
It. So much depth, so many things. I find myself talking too much on my own show as a host because I'm excited as a guest if I'm not careful. But that's why I definitely recommend people make sure to check out your podcast, check all the stuff that you're doing. There's the Generator Stories podcast. There's your stuff on LinkedIn. There's all the things that you're doing. But for this part two, the after show, kind of when the lights and camera go off, even though they're still on and we're still rocking and rolling with this, let's talk about the first thing that I wanted to ask or bring up. You said in the stuff that you told me and when we talked the other day, you took a vacation, you actually disconnected for most of it, you actually turned things off and only checked emails and checked in a little bit on an extended vacation. You say that you're a recovering workaholic. I feel like that's not necessarily true. When you say recovering workaholic, what was then and what is now?
Yes. Okay. So 100% accurate. I took 10 days away from my home. Five of them were at one of our best friends' houses. So I did check in daily in the first 5 days. I'm being 100% honest, as I always am. I did check in daily and I had 2 or 3 meetings that week. And so that was a twice a day check-in and 2 or 3 meetings in the first 5 days. We go to this friend's home every single summer in July. And in previous years, they have a glorious pool area. I've spent a total of probably 2.5 hours and 5 days at that glorious pool because I'm upstairs on my computer the entire time. Or I've even brought my computer to the pool area where I'm like sitting in the shadows on my computer listening to a call that really wasn't that critical for me to be on. So that's what it was then. And so for that check-in this week, those 5 days, that was huge. And then the second 5 days, this is the part that I'm truly, truly proud of as a recovering workaholic. I had 2 meetings, both on the same day within 2 hours of each other. Other than that, I did check my phone every day. My phone still lives by me. But I did not open my computer for 3 days. Recovery is a process. It's not overnight. So for me, recovering workaholic, that was a really, really big step. And I was present with my family. I swam with my daughters every day. I got a tan. I had a pina colada at 2 o'clock in the afternoon because I could. It was lovely. Strongly recommend it.
So you definitely get credit for that. You're definitely working on
Thank
it.
You.
A process. That's significantly different than A, obviously previous times where you've gone on this kind of trip. And B, I know what you're you know, probably putting into things. And it's tough when it's your own business. You just want to give it everything. And it's like, where's that line to stop? I know one of the things you had mentioned to me is doing that, recovering from that mode, and for the business owners and the leaders out there, is letting go of, in your words, hyper control freakiness of being in control and needing to be in control of things. How do you do that? What do you put into place? What can leaders take from what you've learned and done and come back to the fact that everything is not burnt to the ground, that it survived while you were gone?
Yeah. ironic story. The irony is owning my own organization has given me the freedom to try to set better patterns for my staff and for myself than when I worked for other entities. And so I want my business to thrive. My partners are always going to be number one. And so we're not letting them fail in the 3 days that I didn't open my computer. There was still support team in place to handle anything that happened, right? It's not like I shut the business down. Right. But at the end of the day, the accountability, and if there's X amount of dollars here that were made, if I was working 40 hours in 3 days, or X amount of dollars that were made not working, that it is worth it to me to try to give that balance, not only to myself so that I'm healthy and happy and smiley and have all of the energy that I do, to give to our partners and to give to my team, but for my team to see that balance matters. Again, recovering workaholic, I don't want my team to see my behavior and feel like they have to mimic that and drive themselves into the ground every single day. And so I don't know if I really answered your question, but that's what came into my mind for some of my business partners, that for some of the partners we work with and the businesses we work with, the healthiest ones are the owners who actually take away that hyper control freakiness and trust their staff and their team to do what they need to do. And backing away allows them to be a better leader versus being in it, you know, every second of every day and trying to have a pulse on everything. That doesn't work for everybody. And over the years, I've learned it doesn't work for most people.
No. And what comes to my mind when I hear you say that, and I think of examples, is if you have to be so involved as a leader or an owner of everybody and every move and double checking and following everybody and just micromanaging at the finest level, then why do you have them there? Right?
Like, right.
Maybe you have them because you think you need to, or they get some margin of work done. But like, what's the point if you're not actually empowering them, letting them do it and letting them fail and make mistakes, and then being there to support them and pick them up? Because that's what everyone has
learn
to go
from
through.
It, right?
Yeah,
learn from that mistake. From yes.
Yeah. Same thing with parenting, right? Like if you're a parent and you never let your kids make mistakes, right? The helicopter parent that yells at the school when the kid doesn't turn in their homework, how are they going to learn in the real world? Like what are they learning from this versus, you know, making mistakes and having consequences?
100%. And when I did work for other entities, I really struggled when I was micromanaged because I deliver and I know my skill set and, you know, like, numbers are through the roof and things like that. So that trust factor and letting me do my job that you hired me for, I always struggled with that. So I love the word that you use, Jason, of empowering. I really want to empower my team to do what I hired them to do. And I trust them to make the right choices. And everybody makes mistakes. So let's learn from those and move on.
That's it. And it's interesting because going into this part two, one of the other things I wanted to talk about was you not being a hypocrite or focusing on not being a hypocrite. And you actually answered that, because one of the things I was going to say and what you had told me was, you know, practicing what you preach, which is probably all over the place. I wasn't expecting what you said, which is, you know, if you want a balanced life, it's expecting and letting other people have that and not holding them to a standard that you're not doing. What other ways have you found where you might tend to be a hypocrite, or is that the main one? Do as I say, not as I do mode.
Yeah. Places where, ooh, that's a really good question. I love that question. I might need a second to think on that one. I don't know if everybody does, but I try to be cognizant of my behaviors as much as possible and call myself out on ridiculousness. I also do have a strong team that if there's something that I'm doing or I'm saying and what or whatnot, we have a safe environment where we're. This is going to sound trite. It's such a corporate-y term, and I don't mean it, but truly, like 360 review. It's yes, I own the company, but it's okay to call me out and say, "Hey, Jen, you said you were going to do this, but I haven't seen it yet, or I don't know where it is." And so that kind of goes back to part one of the why I want to put EOS into place so that everybody is, you know, rowing in the same direction all the time. So I am open to that feedback. I think the part where I'm a hypocrite and I'm probably blushing as I'm saying this is sometimes as a sales professional and being so passionate about the business and the partners that we help, sometimes I'm like salesperson B, referenced in part one, where I'm doing, and then I'm like, oh man, I didn't enter all those in. Dang it. Now I'm also somebody who lives off my calendar. So if I need to follow up with somebody, I will immediately put it in my calendar because if it's not on my calendar, it may or may not happen.
I don't trust in the CRM though.
Not necessarily in the CRM though. So yeah. That is a work in progress for me as well, because I don't want to be that person putting so much time of like meticulously entering everything perfect in the CRM where I miss out on the activity that's actually helping our partners and helping new partners get what they want and need.
Got it.
So that's my hypocritical part. I need to be better on my own record keeping.
If it I'm helps, owning it. I'll share this so that it's fair because you shared something for the audience to listen to, and I'll share as well. I find myself being aware of and then trying to fix things that fall under the cobbler's kids have no shoes, which is helping my clients put in a CRM and making sure their salespeople do it and instill the value, and then finding myself not having and/or not using a CRM. Right? It's like it's like do as I say because I know these work, but I'm not putting those things.
Not as
place.
I do.
Yes. Email sequences and all these things I'm helping, and a lot of times it's helping everybody else build it, and then at the end of the day it's like, oh my gosh, I don't want to deal with that on my own side. So I thought I would share that as well.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
It's a safe
full
place.
Transparency.
Yes. It is the authentic persuasion show. So I can't be anything but authentic or that'd be weird.
Yes. Yes. I think another topic probably for you and I to have offline, or maybe it would be a different good little podcast nugget though, is when you are setting things up for clients and you're putting that time and effort and love into this system and these processes that are truly going to help them, and then they don't want to adopt it, you can't want it more than they want it. Mm-mm. And that is like, oh. So I would imagine that's a good conversation for you and I another time.
100%. And basically it's like any relationship, right? Like you can't want the relationship more than the other person, like significantly more.
Yes.
And when you're talking especially about a B2B sale, we have a mutual contact and friend in the business with Get the Referral, and it's the same thing with them. Clients say, yes, we would love more business, something like yours as well. This sounds great. And then they just don't do it. And you can't do it for them, right? Like
you can lead them to water.
You can, but that's it, right? Like they've got to do it for themselves. So yes, that's definitely another episode that we could go
different
on.
Different topic.
Right. So one last question, something came to mind and it wasn't even on my radar as I'm thinking about it, like prepping for this conversation, just because I just see what you're doing and I don't see anything in your way, but I also know there's maybe this dynamic that's there. And I would love to hear how you focus on it, how you address it, or how you maybe ignore it, is you being a business owner that is a woman in something like finance, dealing with home service companies, which are generally,
over 90%,
dominated industry with sales even if we just cut out all that stuff looking at sales, it's why I work with a group called Girls Who Sell to try to balance that out. But like looking at you in all the different categories you're playing in where it could be challenging. I don't know if you face that challenge, how you faced it. You just ignore it and don't give it any attention and just rock and roll and go through things. Like where has that come into play for you?
Yes. No, I love that question. I appreciate you asking it because it absolutely is a factor and is a dynamic in the two primary industries I play in, right? There are more female leaders in the financial world than there are in the home improvement world, but they're both very, very small percentages and small numbers. And so for the most part, because of the value my company is bringing to our partners, it hasn't been a huge barrier. And or in my many years on this planet, I have learned to put blinders up. And unless it's really blatant and just downright rude and like in my face, yeah, I don't really notice it. You know, if I'm working with somebody who, let's say, is an older male and they're like, oh, sweetheart, da, 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 da. Oh, you wouldn't know this. You're too young. Oh, you never, like, okay, I'm hearing you and I'm ignoring it to a point. And then there will be a point where I call you out on it. Because I am a nice, lovely gal from Wisconsin, but, I still have, I'm going to say this, you need to edit it out. If you need to edit it nope. out, I still have balls the size of Texas. I will call anybody out on anything. So we can play nice, but I'm not inferior. And so don't treat me that way. So like I said, for the most part, I think over the years, I have learned blinders, which isn't necessarily healthy of, I'm going to ignore XYZ. If it's blatant, I'll call it out. There's also the other side, and I'm feeling this shift in home improvement. I don't know if many are, but there's almost like a new generation of owners and of sales managers coming in that are give or take within my age range. And so Simple Choice works really, really well with kind of this new generation, and within that there are some strong females, and I think it's important in any industry to make connections and build everybody up, and especially in an industry like this where there's very few females, like let's build each other up, let's support each other, how can we help everybody grow and building those networks. And so that it is on my radar. It is something I pay attention to-ish. I haven't had a blatant, I'm not working with you because you're a female-owned company yet. I have had that in my past. I have not had that with Simple Choice.
Well, I appreciate your answer, and I really love what you said, especially about the blinders to a point, because I think that's important, because you're not going to necessarily change people. You could try to debate it, but it's like politics or anyone else. If somebody really thinks that, but if it's a certain point where it's just egregious or offensive, then,
right.
then yes, that's somebody straight. Otherwise, don't look for that kind of issue, and you won't find it as you're going through it.
Right.
And I think that's important. And I think what I see as well, especially in home services, is that new generation, which is not in the, mm-hmm. this is the way we've always done it. And here's who is successful and who is not. And here's how we treat our customers. But new where it's like, all right, yeah, they're open to new ideas, new ways of doing it.
Yes.
They are more looking at the world, not just as themselves as customers, but how do they provide that. So I think that's just a shift every generation, you know, as more of this awareness comes out and just shifting more and more, especially towards that diversity in the workplace and in sales, right? Not just men, women, but race, backgrounds, financial status,
yes.
experiences. Like your customers aren't the same person every single time. So why would no. you have the same sales force that just works for you?
Right. Or walk in with what I call head trash, right? Of this is the pitch I'm going to give to this person because this is who they are. You don't know who they are. Get rid of that head trash. It's ridiculous.
You have no idea. Right. Well, I think that's a great point for us to stop. I've got to figure out how we're going to do part three and part four because I know didn't even get close to the questions that were on my list. And you brought up another one that we need to talk about. So, again, for people who want to find out more, simplechoicelending.com. They can also find you, Jennifer Hatcher, on LinkedIn. Please make sure to check out her podcast, The Generator Stories with a J. Just get it, Generator with a J.
Home Generator.
Services. I can't do something like that with my name, or I haven't found out a way. So I am slightly jealous, but also I think it's amazing and excited for you. So, again, thanks for being here, Jennifer, and sharing with the audience, sharing all of these things, and hopefully helping people just be more effective in their leadership and in their sales.
I hope so.
And for
thank
everyone
you so
watch,
much for having me. Really appreciate it.
Of course. I mean it. I know we're going to have to do a three and a four. I also know at some point we'll end up at the same trade show together. We'll probably have to do some in-person live recording.
We could do
also
a live one.
We could. I totally yes see that happening. So
get a Q&A panel going. Let's do it.
We just make our own conference on the side. We'll get
that's right.
You know, yeah, we'll get the referral team there. We'll get the people that we know that are all focused on the same things, and we'll make it happen.
Yeah,
I
like
it. Be careful
it
with me. I will do it. So and anyone
well,
that knows me,
that's probably why we get along so well.
We got to be careful because then we have that work.
Right, because then we're both going at it. You know, blazing ahead.
Yes. All right. So for people tuning in, thank you for being here, for watching this. Please make sure to share this, put more of this out there. Again, a lot of this is what I do to help shift the way sales is done. So let's all do it internally, what we can do in the world of sales and leadership, but then also putting more of this stuff out there in the world to help shift the way that people see sales and not the, this is the way we've always done it, the head trash that Jen was mentioning with, I'm just going to sell this person in this way, or I sell everyone this way, and instead doing things different. Make sure to check out part one of the conversation, whether you're listening to this on the podcast, so part one came out the day before this one goes live, or if you're online and you're on YouTube, you can check out part one and part two. Until next time, keep selling with authentic persuasion.